Okay, let's get it. Locked on LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona, glad to have you hanging out with us here, ESPN Radio Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, and each and every day right here on the Locked on LSU podcast. You'll hear from former LSU Tiger Ryan Clark and the man who will call the game on ESPN Saturday night, Chris Fowler. First, though, Ed Ogeron, we're recording here Thursday evening. Ed Ogeron met with the media just moments ago, so this is brand new information. Odd that I'm recording this in the evening instead of in the morning, but here we go. A couple of updates regarding some starters. Looks like Neil Farrell and Braden Fehoko will start at defensive end for LSU. They do expect Rashard Lawrence to play, but unlikely he starts. Still unsure if Glenn Logan plays. I'll reiterate all along that what I had been told is that Auburn was sort of the target for Glenn Logan. But big games roll around, and sometimes you want to get guys out there. But expect Neil Farrell and Braden Fehoko to start with Tyler Shelvin in the middle. And expect Rashard Lawrence to get in there and play. How many snaps? We'll see how that all plays out on Saturday. The other interesting note, two offensively, Ed Ogeron said Adrian McGee is going to start at left guard over Ed Ingram, that they're still getting Ingram up to the speed of the game, certain calls, kind of getting back into the swing of things. So Ingram, remember, played one series in the first half last week, then almost the entire second half, but still expect Adrian McGee at left guard and Sadiq Charles at left tackle to start this game, and no doubt you will see Ed Ingram at some point. Also, Terrace Marshall still out. Ogeron said expect Derek Dillon to start at receiver against Florida, and he said, quote, and I think he's going to catch more balls this week. That's interesting to kind of give a nod there to Derek Dillon, and I think in part because you know what Jefferson and Chase are, and if Florida decides to overcommit to those two, who's next? Well, I guess it's Derek Dillon. I mean, Jefferson's got 30 catches. Chase has 23. Terrace Marshall, who obviously has missed a game, has 20 receptions. And then you've got Dillon, Thad Moss, and Stephon Sullivan, all with 8 receptions. And then Clyde Edwards-Helaire has 10, but he's a running back. So of pass catchers, those are your next guys. So it really seems as though Derek Dillon would be the next guy up, and he is the guy with the blow-the-top-off-the-defense, game-breaking speed. So if they take shots deep, perhaps that's the guy to keep an eye on if they look to stretch the field. Perhaps it'll be 19 who does it. The other interesting thing that I wanted to chat with here, discuss here before we get to Ryan Clark. This was an interesting statistic. Will Salmon at The Athletic had a piece kind of about, we've talked so much about LSU's passing offense and that Florida pass rush. Right, that's sort of been the conversation all week. Florida's great at getting pressure. Joe Burrow's great at throwing in the face of pressure. But the other thing when you start looking at game within the game is red zone efficiency. And I don't want to bore you with numbers like that, but the bottom line is teams that get into the red zone against Florida don't do really well. Opponents have scored on just 35% of their red zone chances against Florida, which is absurd because if you get into the red zone, that should be an automatic three. So typically, if you're an offense and you're going good, what you'd like to see happen is you score on 100% of your red zone chances and 75% of those are touchdowns and the rest are field goals. That's if you were like going at an elite clip. So Florida is allowing just 37% conversion in the red zone. That it's just absurd that one out of three times a team gets in the red zone, they convert points, which means Florida is elite at taking the ball away in the red zone. We saw that, obviously, against Auburn this past weekend. Here's the flip side of it. Florida, best in the country at that. LSU, offensively, has been in the red zone 31 times. They have scored 31 times. 26 of the 31 are touchdowns, which means 83% of the time that LSU has gotten in the red zone, they have put 6 points on the board. That is stunning efficiency offensively, and it is stunning ability defensively by Florida to shorten the field in the red zone and keep teams out of the end zone and just off the board altogether. This is a game where if you had Cole Tracy, you feel awesome, and it is a monster opportunity potentially for Cade York to continue to put points on the board, for LSU every time they get down in that red area. So game within the game, just something worth watching. All right, it's Locked On LSU, your team every day. Let me knock out a quick break. We'll come back. Ryan Clark, you'll hear his thoughts on Kyle Trask and if he thinks LSU wins this game, and if so, how. That's next. Locked On LSU, your team every day. We continue Locked On LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona. Glad you're hanging out with us here. Love chatting with former LSU Tiger Ryan Clark. Have that opportunity every Thursday. Chatted with RC, and in part, and you can go here. We chatted for half an hour. You can go hear the full interview at 1045ESPN.com. Just click After Further Review under the On Demand tab, or however you're listening to this podcast at 1045ESPN Baton Rouge. But we started by talking about Ryan's thoughts on Florida quarterback Kyle Trask.
The circumstances he comes into the game against Kentucky, Felipe Franks goes down, a horrible injury to see, and he finds a way to win. Like, he makes the necessary plays to win the game. This is a guy who's waited years to get his opportunity, and he plays with that type of poise. He plays with a level of confidence of at least he feels he's good enough to do the job. It's not that cocky, arrogant, I'm going to push the ball down the field and try to make plays everywhere. It's, you know, I'm going to do what I'm coached up to do. And I believe he does that. I don't think he's special. I think he's good enough to win when P. Ryan goes for 88. I think he's good enough to win when Pitts makes some catches outside the tight end that he out-athleticisms some people on the outside. I don't know if that's a word. I just made it up.
I'd say athletics.
Athletics?
Or athletes. He out-athletes.
There we go.
I don't really think either are... correct, true. Per se, well, we'll but it's just what we accept.
As long as folks accept
in the vernacular, for sure.
For sure. And, you know, so I think he's good enough to do those things. I don't think he's good enough to go win a game. He's probably Joe Burrow last year to me. You know, I think if he has the moxie and the competence to, in the right positions, be successful. He's not Joe Burrow this year where you're like, hey, man, we got a dude. And if this thing turns into a shootout, our dude can win. And I think that's a matter of coaching. That's a matter of talent as well. And I just think he's not that, which is why he wasn't starting. But on a team of talented people, he can be good enough. And I think he's shown that.
What about their receivers? How good are they?
I think their receivers are okay. I used to think Grimes, especially coming out of high school, I thought he was special. Because, you know, I had a son and we would sit inside and watch high school videos all the time. And just coming out of high school before he committed to Ohio State, he was tall, he was fast, strong, could high point the ball. And so I do think there are plays that he can make that are special. So he's a guy that, with given the opportunity, we have to be ready for. Obviously, Pitts is a guy they really like. If you watched him last week against Auburn, really used as an outside wide receiver. Really used as outside wide receiver. And Auburn respected him so much, they didn't cover him with linebackers and safeties. They used corners to cover him. So I think that lets you know what type of athleticism he has. And then you looked, I mean, the other big play in the game is a slant. Where you split the safeties. I forget what 16's name is. It escapes.
Freddie Swain.
Yeah, it escapes me. And so you look at that type of explosion, that big play explosion, then that changes games.
Yeah.
Right? We've seen Vanderbilt have guys make one man miss and go yard on us. And so those things, when you look at their offense, it doesn't look – it's not an explosive offense. It's not what we have. But I think Auburn is a very good defense. I think their coach is an exceptional coach, and they were able to make enough plays to win that game match with their defense. And so defensively, we're going to have to play well. We'll need to get rush on the passer and stop the run.
Do you think LSU's secondary can hold up against those receivers?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
So do you think LSU's defensive line can pressure Kyle Trask?
Caleb Vaughn has to play well. He has to win. Rashard's playing this week, and so that helps.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked. I think those are the only two guys we have that just whip people. I do think when Divinity's healthy and you add him to the rush, he's another one that can do that. And so those guys are going to have to play well. What I will say is I have, in the absence of, you know, Michael Divinity, I have, like, Phillips and Queen's speed. You know, it's been kind of – and I'm not saying they're this type of player yet, But it's been kind of like what Deion Jones and what Quan and what those guys were mm-hmm. able to provide for us. And now you try to look at it and think, okay, what does that look like if a team's going downhill and being physical, which is what we saw a lot of Florida last year in our matchup.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for us, that's what it's about. Can you create pressure with four, maybe adding five to the rush, and protect yourselves inside the hashes? Because I just don't see Florida doing a lot of work outside the numbers.
Ryan Clark's with us at RealRClark25. DB Precision, of course, you can check out on all the social media platforms and dbprecisiontraining.com. That's interesting because so many people have talked about Florida's receivers and Trask throwing the ball. Nobody's really talked about, like, what if Florida just tries to grind out a win? Do you think that's their
approach? That's what I would do.
That's their approach?
That's
just
what
go
I would
try
do.
To run the ball?
I mean, you're going to take your shots, right? Because you believe you have talented wide receivers, talented enough, but that's not how Florida has won games. We can go back as far back as Miami. You watch Florida dink and dunk and break some tackles to get some big plays, but it wasn't this team that was pushing the ball down the field. This isn't Rex Grossman, and this isn't, you know, Danny Werfel and Ike Hilliard and Riddell Anthony. It's not those type of people. It's also not that type of offense. And so I can most certainly see Florida saying, you know what, there's this explosive offense on the other side. Let's play Indianapolis Colts football. Let's try to run the football, take time off the clock, right? Control time of possession, make enough plays offensively to score, and then make them or force LSU into trying to get into that pace. Because what happens is when you start to score like this, you don't like not, right? When it's like
you mean LSU.
Yeah, like LSU, yeah. If you start to – and so now if Florida's had a ball for 5 minutes and they just kick a field goal and you go three and out, which will happen really fast for us because we're fast-paced, we're getting the ball – and now you punt it, and they get four more minutes. Even if they don't score, now Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, like, hey, man, look, this is not us. This is not who we are now. Mm-hmm. Let's not revert to that. And so then they start to press. And you're pressing with Henderson and Wilson and Stewart. And now you got real dudes out here, and you can make mistakes. And so that's the type of game you want the offense to feel the pressure of, okay, we got to keep up this scoring because it's who we are and what we do now. And you want the defense to be like, hold on, man, we're getting our nose bloodied.
Yeah.
And you want some of the other stuff to start the replay, right? You want them to start thinking back to whether it's Vanderbilt when they gave up over 30, whether it's Texas when they gave up a ton of points. You want to start saying, hey, maybe we're not that good. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it's right. Like, Florida struggled offensively this year. Maybe we aren't the team, or we are the team that people outside are saying we are. And that's the type of game you got to get into, because you can't get into a shootout because in some crazy change of events, guess what? We're actually good at shootouts now.
I know,
like,
crazy.
We want to be in one. Like, Joe Burrow would relish the opportunity to be in a shootout with Trask and be able to say, look, this is why I need to be in the first round. Because that's what Joe Burrow's playing for now. I'm on get up, and that's the conversation. The conversation has went for me arguing that he's more Heisman candidate than Trevor Lawrence.
He is.
Oh, it's not. Trevor Lawrence has no shot.
So yeah, he's
but
done.
I say that this summer, though. At some point, somebody's going to be like, dude actually knows what he's talking about. and so now...
Won't be in San Francisco.
Now, right. Now, can Joe Burrow become a first rounder? When you start to hear that talk, you start to believe it and you start to want to prove it. So you keep the ball from him, you're going to pressure him into trying to make some plays.
So give me a blueprint. We have 3 minutes. Give me a blueprint for LSU. Like, what
I think for
it,
LSU,
it goes your way. How does it look?
LSU, you got to do what you have to do. You can't abandon the run. I believe we are a better team when that's part of what we do. I believe Clyde has run the ball well. John Emery and Ty have shown that for the next 3 years, we're going to be amazing at that position. And obviously outside, like, those dudes are dudes. And so I believe offensively, you stay the course. Offensively, you have to be who you've been for weeks. Defensively, the biggest thing is you can't give up big plays. This team, at least to me, from a talent standpoint, isn't good enough to beat you play in, play out, and score a lot of points.
Florida.
Yeah. Right. But what they can do is hit you, 4, 6, 7, 60. And we've seen, you go back to... You look at Miami, you look at Kentucky, You obviously go back to Auburn. That's the way they've won offensively in the big games, in the important games against the good teams, is they found ways to pop plays, whether it's missed tackles, blown assignments. They found ways to score huge touchdowns in huge moments. And when you do that, it alleviates some of the stress off of a backup quarterback.
You think LSU wins?
Yes, I do. I do. And I'm nervous to have confidence because everyone I talk to here who are usually like negative Nellies is super confident. People, you know what I mean? People are like, I've been people, we're going to beat them by 3 touchdowns. And that makes me nervous because I feel like expectations are the greatest leaders of disappointment.
And, that's true.
You know.
But last year, I wasn't sure LSU could score 3 touchdowns in Florida.
They're going to score 3.
Yeah.
They're going
to
score 3.
It's because now we all feel like, all right, you got a team that can go score. You got a chance to win if you can score.
I just think I think what we miss is I do believe this Florida team is a good team. I do believe that when Florida stands, when Henderson and when Wilson, when they look eye to eye with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, it's no fear. I think that's a real life thing. Mm. When Utah State stood across from them, you know what they thought? You know what I'm saying? And I even think Texas, to an extent, Texas wanted to believe. Like, all that stuff we saw before is that, ooh, I want to believe we're good. But they just didn't know. But they also, at the time, didn't necessarily believe LSU was what they were offensively. And when Ja'Marr Chase goes over and Jimbo's you, you're like, oh, crap, I'm not as good as this guy.
Right?
Like, these dudes, this school, the reason there hasn't been like a lot of like DBU versus LSU talk, this and that, is because these dudes believe it. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, they're not trying to convince us, because like in their circle, in the swamp, they believe, nah, man, the dudes that when we line up across from other people, we are the better people. And that's going to be the first time LSU sees this. And what happens from that is going to tell the tale of this game. When you throw a couple of deep and it's jump balls and Ja'Marr Chase ain't the best dude on the field or the best dude on that play, when he jogs back to the huddle, is he like, hey, throw the next one? Is Joe like, hey, I'm going to throw the next one? And I believe they will be, but I don't see it being play-in, play-out success. So what do we do then?
Great stuff as always. Ryan Clark, dbprecisiontraining.com, dbprecisiontraining.com. Chopper style?
Yeah, man, we were rolling early.
We'll send you out with Chopper style from now on.
This is what I'm talking about.
All right, we'll make that a habit.
Because I'm a New Orleans guy now. I get to go home, y'all. I can fly in the MSY. Jay.
It's
Jay.
After Further Review. Chris Fowler joins us next. Again, our entire conversation with Ryan Clark can be heard at 1045ESPN.com. It is the Locked On LSU podcast, brought to you in part by Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime. Let the Vivid Seats app help you get your favorite live event. Enter the promo code KICKOFF at checkout and receive a discount of up to $100. Might be helpful this weekend with Florida coming in. Again, Vivid Seats, use the promo code KICKOFF at checkout and receive a discount of up to $100. Chris Fowler of ESPN will be on the call for LSU in Florida this weekend. You'll hear from him next. Locked On LSU, your team every day. Wrapping up another edition of the Locked On LSU podcast, your team every day. Had the chance to chat with Chris Fowler of ESPN, who will be on the call with Kirk Herbstreit in Tiger Stadium Saturday night. And we started by talking about his feelings and if this LSU offense is for real.
Yeah. I think anybody's a big statement. I mean, we'll see when they go to Tuscaloosa, but I think they have the ingredients to do it because, you know, they're incredibly hard to stop all over the field. I mean, Burrow is the best deep shot guy, the receivers. I think they've been a step ahead play calling. Could run the ball better. They certainly could run the ball better. The concern you have in terms of LSU beating anybody is defensively. And I know they've given up 38 points twice, really, to the 2 Power 5 teams they played. I don't expect them to get hurt that bad by Florida's offense, but that would be the area I'd want them to shore up going forward. But, man, Burrow is a great story, and I love what Joe Brady's doing. And these receivers, I'm really excited to see these different receivers.
Chris, would you rather see a game like the Texas game that became a shootout? Or would you rather see something that more mirrors, I don't know, specifically the game, you know, that when you were here in 09 or some of those other Florida games where I've seen maybe a, you know, a low mid-20s type ball game?
I'm not picky as long as it's close, brother. I just like, what we like is games that come right down to the end. We've been doing talk shows the last couple of weeks because Ohio State is
right
in these second round TKOs. Honestly, I'd like it to be well played. I think that, you know, you can have great low scoring games, that I'm as into that as anybody, as long as it's about great defense and not inept offense and mistakes. I mean, there's been times when, you know, a couple of Florida games have been pretty tough to watch. We had the Miami game early on, very sloppy. And the game with Auburn that I've screened back a couple of times. Yeah, there's great defense being played, but there's a lot of bad offense, a lot of mistakes. And yeah, I'd like to see, you know, aesthetically a little bit nicer, cleaner game than that. But I have no problem with shootouts. I think the Big 12 gets a bad rap. I'm fine with that. You see how good that conference is at the top when you see what Texas is able to do to LSU. Yeah, you know, 400-yard passing game. So it'd be people that shoot that conference down don't understand how tough it is to defend Big 12 teams week in, week out in the spread with quarterbacks who can throw and playmakers who can break tackles. You know, we saw LSU's tackling problems in that game. And yeah, Texas couldn't stop them when they got going, but LSU defensively was exposed a little bit too. So I'm, like I said, shootouts, low scoring, whatever, as long as it's close, I'm good.
Chris Fowler's with us from the LSU weight room. I got two more for you. One, I'd love your impressions of Ed Orgeron today as the LSU head coach, as opposed to maybe your impression of him a year ago or 2 years ago and how he's grown in the job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not inside the walls to see the growth, but the results speak for themselves. And I think, you know, you see what he's able to inspire in terms of assistants who want to coach under him and players who want to play for him, players who will lay it all on the line for him with great effort and intensity. And, you know, he is a character, and characters are often underestimated. They're snickered at. You better be damn good, damn successful if you're going to be a character. And I think that's kind of too bad because the sport needs more guys who are originals, who are not afraid to be themselves, who are not afraid of their own shadow or politically correct all the time and so generic and vanilla. I mean, Coach O is anything but that. So I think that, you know, what he's done is make very, very good decisions on who to bring in. And I think that, again, when you get your players to play for you, come hell or high water, that says a lot about a coach. So, I mean, LSU fans should be excited. And I think people around the country who maybe were skeptical or chuckling a bit, they're not doing that now.
Not just around the country in Baton Rouge. My hand's raised, Chris. So he's made a lot of believers. There's no question. Last thing for you. You've seen a million games in Tiger Stadium. I have a picture up right now of a sideline hit you did with Ben McDonald in that 88 game, which is crazy. Like a very youthful looking Ben McDonald.
88 youthful looking Chris Fowler. 88.
You still got all your hair, bro. I mean, good on you for that. But I wish I'd prepped you on this, but do you have any story, any anecdote, anything that you just always remember about any of your trips to Baton Rouge?
Well, I mean, so many of them. I mean, you know, we've had memories from the morning where it was so hot that I sweated through a suit. I had to take the jacket off at the end of the game and threw it on the ground. And I don't think I ever wore it again. It was one of those September days that I think I'll never forget. I think I lost 12 pounds during the show. But I have memories out tailgating where I'm able to put a T-shirt, the baseball hat on, and I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to call the game. So once game day was done, I kind of blended in with the crowd and enjoyed myself Cajun style, then went and watched on the sidelines. And, you know, you mentioned some of the games that are incredibly memorable. There's been some against Bama. I think the Florida games stick out with Corso gave LSU no chance as a two-touchdown dog to beat Spurrier. And then the goalpost got ripped down. And I heard a great story from a guy today in the airport in New York coming down here, and he said that he was 8 years old. He got his picture with us that morning at game day. And then as the goalposts are being ripped down, I guess an 8-year-old kid was allowed to run on the field. And he ran out there and smeared his T-shirt on the grass. He wanted a grass stain on his shirt on that night. And I said, "Where's that shirt now?" He said, "I don't know. My parents got it kind of a memory box." I said, "You better go claim that. That's still a hell of a souvenir."
True.
And that was the night that the LSU stunned the Gators. And I think when the place comes alive, when LSU is challenged, when LSU's not supposed to win, and then they do, I'm telling you, that's why we do this job. That's as good as it gets in this sport. So even though they are favored this time, I think that there's enough mutual dislike fans here don't seem to like the Gators very much, and that'll certainly spice things up. So I hope to leave with another memory, but there are so many.
Again, if you want to hear the entire interview with Chris, it's at 1045ESPN.com. Click After Further Review on demand. Tomorrow, a special edition of the podcast. I will be joined by Zach Abelverde of Locked On Gators, and we'll do a crossover podcast. He and I will talk about the game together, and we'll look forward to that. Until then, it is Locked On LSU, your team every day.